And welcome back to another week of the Gridiron Graduates, my friends. Hope you guys had a good week. I'm your man, Bill Rossetti, joining as always, and joining me, as always, is my good buddy, Ian Wharton. Ian, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good, bud.
Been a crazy week. The Cubs are in the National League Championship Series. I can't believe it. But we'll get to that in a second, because today's a triple threat show. For the first time in a few weeks, we got a guest on, and we're very excited to have this guy on. Hopefully a good friend of the show soon. He's a great guy. He is a writer for Yahoo with the Shutdown Corner. He also works with 120 Sports. Just a good guy on Twitter. Follow him if you can. Mr. Eric Edholm. Hope I said that right, Eric. How you doing, man?
You did indeed. What's going on? I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Glad you can join us. I just wanted to mention quick, too, kind of how Eric and I met. It was a couple NCAA tournaments ago, I think. I remember Eric, you were asking something about, like, a sleeper team, I think, or something about Tennessee. It was one of the two, because then I'd reply to you. I was like, yeah, Tennessee is an 11. It's going to be a sneaky team.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, I was trying to remember. I was like, I remember it was something like that. I didn't quite remember how it started. That's right, yeah.
You know what the best part about that was? I had Tennessee one and done.
Oh.
Because I remember they were in the play-in game, I think, that year.
Yeah, I tell you what. Every time I've picked what I thought was a pretty good sleeper in my bracket, it's absolutely wrecked any chance I've had of doing well in those things.
Hey, by the way, Iowa State, I still haven't forgiven you from last season.
Yeah, like I said, there's a pretty good example right there.
Iowa State. I mean, I don't know how far you guys had the Cyclones in the tournament. I had them going all the way to the finals.
Yep, and I think I did too. I think I had Final Four or
Final Four.
Yep.
But yeah, let's talk quick too. The Cubs, guys, the Cubs, they're in the NLCS, and the Mets might join. What a crazy baseball season this has been. The Blue Jays are in the Final Four. The Astros might join them. It's nuts, isn't it?
I mean, I'm not a huge baseball fan anymore, but I'll tell you what. I mean, it's been fun to watch. I'm a Red Sox guy, so I technically am a front runner these days, although I can really I can relate to what Cubs fans are experiencing right now. I went through it in 03 up to a certain point, and then for real in 04. So it's been fun watching Chicago just light up with Cubdom and everybody excited. And my friends in Kansas City, too, are, you know, hoping and praying they can make this thing happen. Obviously, we're taping this now, but it's been fun to watch.
Matt Miller, if you're listening, go Royals.
Yeah.
But at least you as a Red Sox fan and Ian as an Indians fan, at least you guys hovered around 500 this season. Me, on the other hand...
What's your team?
Philadelphia.
Oh, my goodness. There we go.
At least they avoided 100 losses, so thank God for that.
There's silver linings everywhere.
That might be the only silver lining of the season is that they didn't win 100 games. But in any event, enough baseball talk. We'll maybe get back to it if the Cubs are in the World Series, especially for the people that listen to me, since I'm from Joe Maddon's hometown, as you all know. So a little fun fact there. But yeah, let's get started. First thing we're going to talk about here with Eric, we found an article of his that I find very interesting. Some of you may know that I also do some bracketology on the side once college basketball season starts. Eric is doing a little bit of that with the NFL. His week 6 playoff projection came out. And so, yeah, go ahead, Eric, if you want to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, every week leading up to the playoffs, not the week before the playoffs, but week 1 through 16, we do... I write the playoff projection, and I try not to go straight off the standings. What I try to do is sort of say, okay, you know, this team is now in a wild card spot, but we think they're going to fade, you know. So let's put somebody who's got maybe a lesser record but bump them up and make some projections here. Is it close to what the standings are now? Of course. And we've got, you know, 5 of the 8 divisions that are – either 1.5 to 3 game leads right now. So there is some separation, but yeah, I change it. I tweak it every week a little bit, sometimes a lot, sometimes dramatic things happen in the league. And so I just pray that you guys don't go back after the season and look at my week 1 projections because they won't look very good, but it's fun. And I get feedback. A lot of people write me and say, you're crazy. You know, this is nuts. But it is fun to do and just sort of see how everything changes week by week.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, my week one projections are already kind of shot to smoke.
Oh, yeah,
Miami as a wild card. I actually went kind of against the grain and took San Diego to win the West. Looking so hot at the moment.
I'll let you guys have a fun project. I won't say it on the show, but if you want to do a little internet research, go look at who I had in the AFC for the Super Bowl. Let's just say it's not looking so hot right now.
Boy.
That's a little project for the two of you guys.
Yeah, just looking at it, you got kind of some interesting picks. You got the Giants winning the East. Vikings getting that second wild card, though. I like it. I picked the Vikings to make the playoffs as well. Huge mm-hmm. Teddy fan. So Jets nabbing a wild card too. So what were some of your thoughts going into this week's projection?
And I did kind of acknowledge they're picking the Giants very reluctantly. I mean, I'm not hoping, I don't care who wins any race, but I'm just hoping to see what the Cowboys can do if Romo and Brian are healthy, because I still think they have the most talent in the division. And I picked the Giants very reluctantly in the sense that, well, they're up now, and Tom Coughlin has this kind of experience. And when he's been, you know, in the back against the wall kind of situation, they've led in every fourth quarter this year and that sort of thing. So if Romo can get back, if Dez can get back sooner rather than later, I think the Cowboys will be very tough to beat. The Vikings, you know, they're interesting. They have the early bye. We'll see how they respond. We know they have some tough games coming up. I think they're starting to come together, and maybe one of those teams that starts nipping at the heels of the Packers a little bit. I don't think they'll catch them, but I think they'll make it interesting. And it's hard not to like what Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman and those guys have put together their roster wise.
I totally agree. I mean, they're definitely a fun team. I really like how North Turner has kind of mitigated that offensive line talent
mm-hmm.
and concern. Like, it's such a fine line when you don't have a good offensive line. It's such a fine balance. But you have this team that they like to go vertical with Norv, obviously, but then you've got this quarterback and this offensive line that says, that might not be our greatest strength. But
right. Obviously
working off of Adrian Peterson, you still have to take those shots. I just think that they've done a nice job with a limited wide receiver crew, an offensive line that's really struggled. Teddy Bridgewater, which, I mean, I'm a huge fan of, but it's one thing to say that he's a good quarterback. It's another thing to say that he's some great deep ball passer. I mean, he's obviously, that's not his strength. So, yeah, they've been a really fun team so far. I know they've been kind of like a popular pick before the season
for
the playoffs, but, you know, I totally agree with you there. One thing I do want to ask you about, too, is, you know, I was reading the Shutdown Corner this week, and I like how you pointed out Panthers versus Giants matchup. Just to kind of take a snippet out of this piece, you mentioned that both teams use their quarterbacks really to the extreme because they don't have a whole lot around those quarterbacks with injuries, limited talent around them. Obviously, Odell Beckham on the Giants, that's not necessarily a limited talent situation, but their offensive line is. What do you think that this game means for both of these franchises at this earliest part of the season?
Yeah, and you know, I think it's obviously, like you pointed out, I think it's a little more extreme with the Panthers, who may have the better defense of those two teams, but certainly offensively is very, very limited. And, you know, the Giants more have been struck by injury, you know, and crazy situations too, like Daniel Fells' MRSA and JPP's, you know, hand and all these different things. And, you know, and that's why you make those quarterbacks number one choices, because they have to take on the extra burden of everything else going on around them. And that's what Eli and what Cam have done really good jobs of is putting the load on their shoulders, willing to take the criticism when it's there, when it's needed, and when it's, you know, when it fits. And also make up for, I mean, that last drive with Eli. I mean, you know, Beckham drew the PI, but he was only out there that one play, I think. And, you know, it was a shell crew around him, and linemen had gone down and things. So that was just very impressive. And the same with Cam, and we'll see how he responds in Seattle on Sunday. But I'm just fascinated to see how both of these teams you know, can they keep it up? Can they stay? It does feel like it's scotch taped together a little bit, and it does feel like there's a little smoke and mirrors going on. But it's good coaching, and it's good quarterbacking. So I'll take both of those any day of the week.
Yeah, it does feel, I guess, especially with the Panthers, like the question is it going to be sustainable for the rest of the season? But, you know, certainly with the short or the small sample size we have, they have been playing well, especially surprising me because I didn't think their offensive line would be good enough to actually hold up. You know,
yeah.
Like Michael Orr on the left side to me was a bit of a red flag. The running game hasn't really gotten going. You know, we love Jonathan Stewart, but injuries are still plaguing him. He can't get going, so... You know, like you said, it's really Cam Newton kind of having to do it by himself. One more thing, too, about this. I really thought it was interesting how you paired the Steelers against the Colts, and more specifically how you pointed out that it's been 10 years since the tackle. When I noticed that, I was like, wow, you know, it's hard to believe it's been that long already. 10 years ago that the Steelers tackled their way to a Super Bowl, kind of.
Yeah. Oh, and when I looked it up, it was funny because I was I said, oh, when was that game? Was that 2008, 2009? You know, and I'm trying to go through the playoff logs, and I'm saying, where was that? And I said, oh my gosh, that was the 2005 season,
yep.
January of 16. And I mean, it is, I said, or of 06. I said, it's been 10 years. I couldn't believe it. And that's one way to make me feel old really fast is when 10 years go by in a flash. So yeah, it was a wild game. I was supposed to go to it. I had something happen at the last minute. I couldn't go. And so, yeah. And then, ended up seeing them win a Super Bowl. So it was a wild season for those Steelers.
Awesome. So let's kind of go on to what has happened this season. We'll kind of talk a little bit, who, after these first 5 weeks, would you say are some of your surprises in terms of, like, you know, teams, players, whatever, surprise, disappointments, things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obvious to say, okay, New England, Green Bay have looked terrific. You know, those are two teams that we don't have a lot of questions about. I think the Bengals have been one of the great surprises in the NFL. I mean, I knew they had talent. And I mean, I knew 2 years ago they had talent, you know, and you know, it's not a surprise that this roster has continued to look as good, minus the quarterback position before this year, as almost anyone in the league. It was just a matter of could they put it all together. And Dalton stepped up to the plate. You know, they get Marvin back and they get Tyler Eifert back and they get Geno Atkins a year removed from knee surgery. And it has the feel of a really something interesting going on there. You know, I think you can't say the Cowboys are a disappointment yet because of, you know, the injuries, but right. I'm still waiting for them. The Eagles are obviously a fascinating story. They're 2-3. They've, you know, scored more points than they've given up this year, but it still doesn't feel quite right even with a win and now maybe a little bit of momentum. So They were the team everyone was talking about. I think Seattle is still in the same position they were a year ago when they were 3-3 and nobody was really saying Super Bowl again, but they turned the Jets on. They were three games back heading into week 12 last year. So
that's true. Yeah.
I can't bury this team yet. You know, I really can't say that, you know, that it's a super dire situation. And I guess, you know, to a certain degree that the Lions are a disappointment. I think it's the way they're losing games and the vibe around this team more than anything that's disappointing. So, you know, they've been in a couple of these games and look competitive, but a few more have been pretty ugly.
What about you, Ian? What's your take there?
For a surprising team, you know, man, it's hard not to go with Cincinnati, but
sure.
You know, I'm going to maybe say the Cardinals. And if you just look at how dominant they've been for stretches of this season, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I was kind of down on them entering the season. I was like,
I was too.
yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely. Me and you, Bill, I mean, we talked about it. And, you know, you lose a coach, an assistant coach like Todd Bowles. You know, I was pretty familiar with Bowles. Obviously, he was in Miami for a couple years. And, I mean, I just had the highest respect for him as an assistant coach. But, you know, to replace him, to replace depth on the defensive line, Darnell Dockett is gone. He was such a key cog. You have no idea what Carson Palmer is going to be. And they just come out. And this is a team that looked like they had just played 7 or 8 games, and everyone else was, you know, coming in for preseason football. Like, they were executing at this high level right off the bat with players coming off major injuries. Patrick Peterson playing at a whole new level compared to what he played at last year. And obviously there were some health issues last year, but, you know, what they've done in the first 4 or 5 weeks is really, to me, it's not, I can't say it's more impressive than anyone else, because, you know, like Eric mentioned, there's 3 or 4 other teams that look as dominant. But it's been extremely impressive to me. And I feel so dumb for having questions about Bruce Arians being able to right that ship. After
he's proven a lot of us wrong.
He is such a fantastic coach. Yeah. And, you know, just don't underestimate that guy. Because, you know, I feel kind of silly ever questioning him righting that ship.
This sport will do that to you.
Yeah. And it's crazy to think that even with a loss, they've outscored their opponents by 100 points through 5 games. 100 points. They have they and the Falcons are the leading scoring teams in the NFL right now. Cincinnati's 5th, you know, so, or 4th, I guess. So it's just been fascinating to watch just how many times they can light up the scoreboard. I mean, it's come from their defense, come from their special teams, come from their offense. I mean, it's been a total team effort so far for Arizona.
Absolutely. Yeah. For me too, those are two of the surprises, Arizona and Cincinnati, and certainly Atlanta too. I mean, I did peg Atlanta to win the South, but by no means did I think they're going to get off to as fast of a start as they did. I thought maybe, you know, 9 wins for them could take this division, because I didn't think this division would be so vastly improved from last season. I mean, you look at where they were last year, and it just didn't feel like these teams really improved all that much throughout the offseason. But now here are the Falcons possibly getting to 6-0, assuming they beat the Saints tomorrow night.
And look at their schedule. It's crazy. They could get to 9-0 before the bye.
They really could. Their schedule is really easy coming up. I'm just bringing it up quick to...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they've so got...
The Saints this week, then at
Tampa, Tennessee, yep.
Tampa Bay, and then San Francisco before the bye. So, yeah, they very well could be 9-0 going into their bye, which is simply amazing. And then they still have games. Well, they have a second game against the Buccaneers, and they still have a game against the Jaguars. So this looks like a team that's going to win double-digit games this season.
Yeah, even if they lose one of these next 4, you know, if they slip up Thursday. Yeah, even if they drop one of them, absolutely, they still could be 10, 11, 12-win team if, you know, they finish strong.
Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, sorry, Ian, but I got to say this, my biggest disappointment is the Miami Dolphins. You know, I had such high expectations for this team, and they've really just crumbled. But they could pick it up. You know, hopefully the new coach can bring in a good attitude. Apparently there's reports that Ryan Tannehill feels the new coach's attitude is kind of permeating onto the rest of the team. So, you know, we'll see this week against Tennessee, but I don't know, they could still turn it around. I want to talk to a little bit about, you know, like one or two of the games from Week 5. I definitely want to talk to you guys and get your thoughts on the Seahawks-Bengals game, which turned out to be one of the better games of the week. Bengals, of course, winning in overtime 27-24 after a huge comeback in the fourth quarter. It felt like just in the second half, it was a tale of two stories. The Seahawks looked real good in the third quarter. Defense was playing well, and then all of a sudden the Bengals offense just wakes up in the fourth quarter. Just what a comeback for the Bengals, what a win for them, and just what a demoralizing loss for the Seahawks to drop to 2-3. So, Eric, what were your overall thoughts about that game?
Yeah, I really thought it was going to turn after the Dalton pick, the one that Earl Thomas ran back 70 yards or whatever. You know, that was the kind of play that up till this season and up, you know, before anything we saw in 2015, when Dalton made plays like that, it tended to snowball into something worse. You know, he has been the NFL's player of the month before. He's had high highs, but I always felt like that one game-changing, demoralizing pick could really turn a game on its head. It didn't. And even after surviving, like you said, that third quarter onslaught, what was it? 14-0. I think that they outscored them in that, mm-hmm. They hit Eifert. They get the Dalton runs it in. And then it's just like
he's been having too.
Yeah. I mean, it's just been so impressive. And, you know, they've got really nice contributing players too. It's Mohamed Sanu stepping up with a big game. You know, Gio Bernard, after looking like he was sort of being cast aside by Jeremy Hill, Bernard steps up and has a really nice game. And Vincent Ray on defense and Carlos Dunlap and Atkins returning to form. You know, Brandon Tate making big plays in the return game and just things like that. I just thought, you know, Adam Jones had a long punt return in that one too. So it's been like up and down the roster. And that O-line last year was not a good group in my opinion. They've been as solid as almost anybody. And, yeah, Bennett got a few shots, but for the most part, I think they did a pretty good job, especially in the second half, really doing a nice job protecting Dalton. I know he got sacked 4 or 5 times over the game, but, you know, he was able to operate and operate cleanly after a while.
Yeah, and definitely that's been one of the keys, too, for the Bengals is the offensive line. I thought they've been playing very well. You know, Andrew Whitworth has been playing well. You know, Zeitler, guys like that. So just overall, just an outstanding performance by the Bengals. What about you, Ian? What'd you take away from that game?
Oh, that was, you know, that was a really big grow up moment, I think, for this Bengals team.
Yeah.
You know, you can say what you want about Seattle. Their defense doesn't look quite as nasty this year. Their offensive line is obviously a huge issue. But look, we can't hide one fact. This is still a Super Bowl contender. Yep. This is still a team that you can't go to sleep on because we saw it in the first half especially. This is a really good team when they're focused, when they're executing. It's still a nasty pass rush. They're as talented as anyone in the NFL. Every team has holes. It's not like you can go find a team without holes. So,
right.
You know, to win that, to come back, to win that game, it just – you're starting to believe in Andy Dalton. I don't know about you guys, but like I is he elite? No. I mean, I we need to stop that debate with a lot of these quarterbacks. I mean, there's like 4 elite quarterbacks. Okay, you got Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger, Phillip Rivers, and maybe you can add in maybe one or two.
Joe Flacco. Wait, no.
Yeah. Andy Dalton's probably not ever going to be that guy, but it's okay. He doesn't have to be that guy because they built a strong enough roster to where he just has to be good. And consistently good. And, you know, we've seen him, pair 3, 4, 5 games together that were pretty strong in the past. But he's doing it now to start the season. He's starting to get that feeling like, okay, you know, has he grown up from caretaker to maybe be a little bit more? And I think that if he is that guy, that's going to make this team super dangerous when it comes to the playoffs. Like, and obviously we'll see. We've got a lot of time left before the playoffs. But, you know, Hugh Jackson's done a great job with that offense. Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Marvin Lewis. I know he doesn't have a playoff victory, and people can point to that all they want, but this is a guy that's changed the culture of this franchise from the ground up. And, you know, I just think that this is a team that I would not be surprised if they make the Super Bowl eventually, not just based off this one game, but there are hints of things that you've seen in each game so far that makes you say, this is a different team. And maybe I underestimated them at the beginning of the season too, partially because of Dalton. But I didn't think this defense would be quite as maybe not dangerous because they're not a terrifying defense, but they're consistent enough and they get enough stops to be in the game. And their offense has done a really nice job, especially with Bernard. Bernard looks just great this year.
Yeah, and we've mentioned a couple times now on this show that it's real nice to see Gio Bernard get back involved in the offense because, you know, yeah, Jeremy Hill had a great season last year, but it also made some of us kind of forget that, hey, Bernard's still a good back too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could still get involved in this offense as well. And now that they're getting both backs going, it just makes that offense a little bit more dangerous and that much better. By the way, Eric actually has the Bengals currently as the number 2 seed in his playoff projection, for those curious. He actually has – I'll just run through quick. He has Packers, Falcons, Cardinals, Giants, division leaders – or division winners. And then the Panthers and Vikings as the wild cards. AFC, Patriots, Bengals, Broncos, Colts, Wild Cards, the Steelers, and the Jets. I guess we'll talk quick about another game, too, before we kind of move on here. Well, first, I guess we'll mention that last play by the Steelers. Le'Veon saved by the bell, as it were.
Yeah.
What a gutsy play, and what an amazing play by Le'Veon Bell. Just outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, having seen them run the Wildcat a few times in that game up to that point, and having, you know, kind of limited success and everything, I thought, they're not going back to that. Well, they line up in that way, and I thought, wow, that's interesting. And then, you know, they have a timeout, but are you going to even get to use it? Are you going to even get the chance to, with 5 seconds left? They didn't trust Vic up to that point. I didn't like the idea of him really throwing the ball, having seen the Baltimore game and the two fourth down failures there. So I knew Bell had to get it. And I thought if he went in motion as a receiver, that kind of tips off where you're going with the ball. So that was really the only option, I guess. And for him to make that second effort, DeCastro seals it off. He gets in. I mean, that's as exciting as it gets. You look great if it works and terrible if it doesn't. Yeah, but
as it always is.
Yeah.
Like the Pete Carroll play.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been brilliant that he called a throw there, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was it's the kind of thing that makes you think, all right, well, Arizona's going to be tough this weekend. They still got to, you know, play some tough teams. Got to go to Seattle later in the season. They got Denver. And
still have both games against the Bengals.
Yep. I mean, they finished with 3 of 4 on the road. I think 4 out of 6 on the road after the bye. So, yeah, it's still an uphill climb, but I still like this team.
Yeah. Another topic I wanted to get your thoughts on quick, Eric. It's been a week, but figure we'll still get your thoughts on it.
Sure.
About the call in the Monday night game between the Seahawks and the Lions, the missed batted ball. Just your thoughts on that and kind of the ref misses that we've seen in general. We just saw another mistake here this past Monday night with the game clock error. Are these refs mistakes kind of hurting the product, or – you know, what's been your take on that topic?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the clock error, that's just somebody asleep at the wheel. You know, and the guy, I saw a report right before I jumped on with you guys that the guy got suspended with pay. I think they realized, look, it's human error. It's the kind of thing that could happen. I'm shocked that nobody on that Pittsburgh sideline noticed that. I heard that there were fans in the stands. You guys saw there were a lot of Steelers fans out in San Diego.
Yeah.
I heard there were people like screaming down on the sideline, the clock's still moving, you know, but somehow none of the 53 players, none of the, you know, 18 or so coaches noticed it. So, you know, those kind of things, it's quirky, it's unfortunate, it just happens. The batting rule, I mean, I knew the rule. I can't say that I would have made the right call in that moment because you don't know how you're going to react, but I'm a little surprised that they didn't consider it an overt act at the time. So that was a shock to me, and it should have been called. We know that. Mm-hmm. And yet I can't help but think that the competition committee every year makes complicated rules even more complex by just adding layers of interpretation and more rules and more bylaws and more subsets of bylaws. And it just gets so voluminous. It's like, these people have to be automatons. They have to be these like robotic creatures who, you know, and you're asking to interpret things and also to know these rules wrote. And it's very, very, very difficult. So even a rule that I think they should know, they miss. So it's kind of goes both ways on that deal.
Mm-hmm. It's like the catch rule. No one knows what the hell a catch is anymore.
I don't know what a catch is. I really don't. I've tried to explain it to people, and then I get confused myself, and I just give up.
I don't even think I can explain it at all. Anyway, anymore, you just watch a play, you just watch a game. You know, if you're watching with your buddies, they'll go, "That's a catch," and you just sit there thinking, well,
I guess so. Just, yeah, right.
Maybe just Sure, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, and like you mentioned, like with the rule changes, like especially with the Dez Bryant rule, they didn't clear it up. They made it more convoluted.
Like, some people like it, but I don't feel like it's given me any clarity.
Yeah, no, it just doesn't seem clear at all. Like, there's just way too much in it. Like, we need like a clear, defined catch rule, and of course the NFL's busy finding players for eye patches and not
exactly
the important stuff. So
eye patches, you know, pink, you know,
yeah, wearing pink outside of October because, you know, God forbid a player supports his mother.
Yep. But yeah, that's the league we're in now, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately. All right, I think we have a little bit of time left with Eric, so let's kind of talk some of the week 6 games and get your thoughts. We talked a little bit about the Falcons, as I'm just scrolling through this week's games. Seems like kind of another meh week, but some decent games. The Sunday night game, definitely one of the highlight games, if only for the fact that it's the rematch of the AFC Championship game. The Monday night game, Eagles-Giants, an interesting one. Rivers against Rodgers,
mm-hmm.
Nice matchup. So what are some of the games you're looking forward to this week, Eric?
Yeah, I think Carolina-Seattle. They've played like 4 games in the last 4 years in the regular season. They played another one in the postseason. They've all been – the playoff game got a little out of hand, but they've been – tended to be lower scoring, close games.
Yeah.
You know, Kuechly's back. Marshawn's banged up. You know, just there's some interest there. And I think Carolina will approach this game similar to how Cincinnati approached the Seattle game last week, which was we have a chance to prove people now. We have a chance to show people that we're legit. So that's one I'm keeping my eye on. Certainly, as you mentioned, Patriots-Colts, the storylines write themselves. We know what they are. I think it's interesting that Luck is – they're still kind of saying – well, he's limited in practice. I just don't know if he's going to be fully healthy all year. I really don't. And so I have so much pause to begin with the Colts, and I didn't love them preseason. I just thought they were the best in a bad division, and I'm mm-hmm. feeling even more so now. So
yeah.
You mentioned Monday night, Giants-Eagles obviously had a lot on the line as far as that division goes, another lower rung division, we think.
First place for the Eagles if they can get it.
Exactly. And, you know, that would be the strangest first place team in the league. And yeah. We would just go from there, I guess.
I'm not going to lie, too. I'm sorry to cut you off quick.
No.
I was actually kind of hoping that the Giants would lose on Sunday night so that we'd have a 4-way tie at 2-3.
That's right. Yeah, just to really up the inspiration, just a notch. Right, yeah. But, yeah, those are the big ones. And, you know, I mean, look, the runaway train of Josh McCown and Gary Barnidge against that great Denver defense,
gosh.
Right? You know?
Are we going to have another between-the-legs catch?
I'm counting on it, yes.
Where did that come from, too? Josh McCown and Gary Barnidge.
Yeah.
Ian will tell you, too. Him and I are, like, kind of on the boat now of that Johnny Manziel should have been the quarterback of this team. But to see McCown go out there and throw for 450 yards.
That was crazy.
Against a Ravens team that's usually so good on defense. Like, and that's another big surprise for this season, how bad the Ravens have looked. Like, it's just unbelievable, some of the stuff we've seen this season.
Losing close games, like you said, being bad defensively. And you know, we knew Terrell Suggs was an important part of this team. We didn't think he was, you know, like
I mean, still with Doomerville and Jimmy Smith and still some talented guys on this defense. It's
CJ
like,
Mosley,
wow.
Yep.
It's unbelievable how that defense has fallen. I mean, goodness. I mean, I know Ladarius Webb, he struggled last year, and he's continued to struggle. But man, like, just like from a communication standpoint, like, Will Hill is a really good safety, but just on like a play-to-play basis, this defense has like no idea what they're doing. And I mean, we saw Derek Carr shred them in, I think it was the second week.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that was just wide open guys, like just sliding behind the defense. And it's just like, this doesn't look like the same team. And it's, you can kind of say the same for Pittsburgh's defense, I know they've been aging and they weren't really good the last couple of years, but it's just so foreign to what we've seen over the last decade or so. It's quite shocking to consider this a team of the last 15 years has been one of the best in the NFL. It's almost like you could switch them with, you know, other perennial bottom feeders and say that's who they've been for the better part of, again, the last decade. But it's just so weird to see a team take a drastic, sharp decline like that.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact is, they're a ugly Steelers loss away from being 0-5.
Yep.
You know, if it wasn't for Pittsburgh simply imploding that Thursday night, we're talking about an 0-5 Ravens team. Oh, by the way, one thing I wanted to say to you too, Eric, I want to see the Jaguars in your playoff prediction, damn it.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for the Jaguars turnaround.
Believe me, I thought they'd be one of the more improved teams a year ago. I was a little less excited entering this year, but
I still had them too.
You know, I thought they might be 6-10, 7-9, maybe 8-8, you know, like, and look, Bortles has played well, and it's like, hey, I understand Cedric Marks and Dante Fowler were going to be two of your dogs up front. I get that, you know, but I can't imagine them being less competitive in some of these games. It's stunning. I mean, Colts game, yeah, that one they should have won. Bucks, they made it look a little closer than it was. I mean, it just obviously they have the finish against the Dolphins there, but yeah, it's been sort of shocking. I mean, giving up 50% conversions on third downs defensively, can't get off the field. You know, one interception maybe this year, zero or one, I can't remember which, but that'll tell you all you need to know about what they're doing defensively, and you know, just not able to make those impact plays.
Let me ask you this: does Gus Bradley come back next year?
Oh man, this is the
million-dollar question.
Very interesting question, because I kind of sniffed around it this summer. I made a few calls around the league. I was writing a story about the coaches on the hot seat, and I said, here's the deal. I'm going to put 10 on the list. That's a lot. So I'm going to include a couple guys that probably are borderline. And I put on my initial list, I put Gus, and I made some calls, and they said, no way, man. They're in. They're invested at least 3 years, and he and Caldwell are a team. They're all in. They believe in him. This is their guy. The players love him. Well,
it's funny how things change.
It feels different, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I know they lost Rashad Greene and Fowler and some of these other guys. I don't know. I hope they don't go to London and have a Joe Philbin-like situation on the way back. You know what I mean? It seems like whoever goes over to London every year is in danger of getting fired. And so I hope they can see this thing through and start improving a little bit.
Yeah, that's in a couple of weeks. That's why I love taking control of the show. We can go from talking about the top teams like the Packers, and I'll just turn it right around to the Jaguars, because damn it, I love the Jaguars. I want to see them turn it around.
They're like the cool hipster team, right? They're the team that they're like the LA Clippers of like set. Eventually they'll be good. We don't know exactly. Yeah. But
we keep
saying
they'll get there. Maybe next year they'll get there. They just need a few more pieces, but they'll get there.
I tell you what, when you get Yeldon and Hearns and Robinson and Thomas going, and
yeah,
I mean, the pieces are there, man. I really do feel like there's some intriguing stuff. They just got to play better on defense.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Any final thoughts, Eric? You know, if you want to plug anything you got going on or anything quick you want to.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do a draft thing every week, and as we get closer to the draft, I'd love to get your guys' take. I'll start up a podcast, a draft-related podcast, pretty soon. But I'm writing about Jared Goff coming off the bad game last week.
I know he and your boy, Jared Goff.
Yes.
Still a fan.
I am, too. You know, and I mean, I think that's going to be the interesting litmus test, is how does he respond from a game like this? And if you look back, there are some top quarterbacks who've had just – bad nights, and you know, the balls bounce funny, and you start making bad decisions, and it can snowball. So that's sort of my topic for this week, and then every week try to change it up just a little bit. And it's a very interesting quarterback year for 2016, and not deep, not exciting, but there are a couple guys who I think are pretty good.
Yeah, Yeah, we definitely love to have you back on draft season, get your thoughts
sure.
on some of these
absolutely.
Players.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. It was great.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks so much, Eric, for joining us, man. We really do appreciate it.
All right. I will talk to you guys down the road.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, care. Buddy.
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, it was real great to have Eric on the show. Again, you can catch him on Yahoo, writing for the Shutdown Corner. And he is on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. That's EDHOLM. So go ahead and follow him if you aren't. So, Ian, are you awake? We'll get you back on.
I am. Oh, absolutely. No, I'm just listening and enjoying.
Absolutely.
It's always nice to have a good guest on, and I think we hit that one out of the park.
That was great. Absolutely. It was a real good conversation with the three of us. And like I said, I love just inserting the Jaguars into our topics just because we can.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny, too, because, you know, we mentioned Gus Bradley, and I've been to the Senior Bowl 2 years in a row, and he's been there 2 years in a row,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, it's not – you don't want to hear that. It's not a good thing that he's been there 2 years in a row. But I have to say, I mean, I love how he runs his practices. I like how intense their assistant coaches are. They do spend time with their players trying to improve them. You can see it. I mean, just watching him and his staff attack the practice field and then comparing that to how Mike Smith – the former Falcons coach, how he attacked the practice field. I still get the sense that he is a good, that he can be a good coach, that he can lead a winning team.
Mm-hmm.
It's just unfortunate because there's so much that's gone wrong for them,
yeah.
And they haven't hit enough of their picks. They haven't gotten enough stars, or you know, at least very good studs, and ultimately, that's what it takes to win in the NFL.
Yeah.
And I don't know who blame needs to go on for that. I mean, I believe that they should get some breaks there. I mean, what they started with in the beginning, they were so far behind the eight ball.
They really were. I mean, the arrow's still pointing up for this team. It's
it is.
You know,
we'd
love to pounce on them, but the fact is, they're still a better team than they were, say, 3-4 years ago.
That's true, and I still think that there's hope for a guy like Bortles.
Yeah.
You know, Bortles is just – he's inconsistent. There's no doubt about that. But they've had the most drops in the NFL from what I've charted, and I'm not 100% up to date on those charts, but his receivers really haven't helped him. And when they seem to be missing plays, of course it was a great play from Bortles. And when Bortles misses, you know, of course it's going to be exaggerated because of – the receiver may have gotten open or something. So it's just guys just aren't on the same page, and there's mm-hmm. just a level of execution issues. And I mean, it is what it is. I mean, ultimately that's going to fall on the coaches at some point. I do hope that that team gets a couple more years though. Maybe one more draft, allow Dante Fowler to come back, allow them to get maybe a Joey Bosa or maybe a dynamic linebacker like Jalen Smith or someone, you know, you can make an argument for a lot of different players on that team. That's kind of the nice part for them, is they can go get Vernon Hargraves or something in the top 10 or Jalen Ramsey from Florida State, and that'd be a huge impact for them. But, you know, I don't want to touch too much on the Jaguars because they're not doing too well, but just know Jaguars fans that there are improvements being made, even though you're not seeing it so much on Sundays. It's, you know, as far as consistency winning, it's just a long process, and it's very difficult when you blow things up as far as everything with like the roster ownership. It just takes time, and it's going to take patience. I mean, there's a lot of high profile jobs that may come open this year. The Dolphins are going to be fairly attractive. The Colts are going to be fairly attractive for teams because they've got stud quarterbacks, and the Jaguars don't have that right now. And, you know, I'm not saying Bortles won't be that guy. I still have faith in him, but it's just going to be tough. So it's like, would you rather have one more year of Gus where continuity is going to help? I mean, at some point you have to be a franchise that believes in somebody, and maybe not faith, you know, not without doubt. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that you have to commit to him for life. And this goes for any franchise that's struggling out there, not just the Jaguars, but I think 3 years is fair. I think that's a good amount of time. If improvements aren't made on the field with the win-loss record, 3-4 years in, then all of a sudden you can say, okay, you know, this just isn't working. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do think he needs one more year. I hope he gets that opportunity.
Let's move on. We quickly brought up Jared Goff. Eric said he's writing about him, so I want to get your thoughts on him. Turns out he didn't have that great of a game against Utah, did he? Looking at his stats, 25 of 47, 340 yards, 2 touchdowns, 5 interceptions.
Yeah.
As Cal lost 30-24. So I'm sure you charted all his plays from that game against Utah. What happened?
Yeah, it was a tough game. It wasn't as bad as the 5 interception number tells you. Because that makes it sound like he had a disastrous game.
Perfect example there that the stats and the film don't always match up. You know, don't just box score stat people.
Right. Was it a bad game? Yes. It was the worst game I had seen him playing all year.
Right.
But it was also against the best opponent he's played by far this year. And so I think that plays into it. You could tell that the entire Cal offense was a little overwhelmed by the speed, the physicality, the intelligence that Utah defense has. And that's a credit to Utah. You know, Utah tricked Goff a couple times, and Goff has struggled against cover 2 coverages a few times this year. So he's thrown 3 interceptions from what I've counted against cover 2. And so that's, you know, something that you note. And as a defense, you're going to give him as many looks like that as possible. He also made several other dangerous throws on those same coverages. So there's something there where his pre-snap read or his post-snap read is not doing a good enough job reading that coverage. And Utah exploited that fully. And then a couple balls just didn't go his way. He delivered a perfect strike to Kenny Lawler on 2 occasions. One was dropped for an interception. One was dropped for a drop TD. He had the chance. Goff had the chance on 3rd and 5 on the last drive of the game to convert that play. He delivered an accurate ball to the far sideline, and it was simply dropped. And then the next play, it was a batted ball that defender played perfectly. So, you know, it's one of those things where if that 3rd and 5 gets converted like it should have been, the whole narrative may have changed. Yeah, he had 5 interceptions, but he almost helped upset the number 5 team in the country. So it's like one play can do that. And he still had several excellent throws where he was just throwing into tiny spaces with perfect ball placement, perfect timing, anticipation. He wins the game. He wins so well with anticipation, with his mind, with his eyes. He's able to take advantage of defenses by moving safeties and linebackers out of the way. He's able to escape pressure fairly well. He's not excellent in that area, but he does it consistently enough to where you can say that that's a strength of his game. Is his arm strength an issue? I wouldn't say it's an issue. The ball flutters on him a little bit, but he controls it really well. Again, he's still putting the ball in spots where only his receiver can get it on about 9 out of 10 throws. And so that leaves a couple of throws a game where he either just misses, which all quarterbacks will do, or he takes an unnecessary risk. But as we see with a guy like Eli Manning, sometimes brilliance comes out of those risky passes. Same for Tony Romo. Sometimes you have to make the dangerous pass to be successful in the NFL. And that's what I liked so much about Jameis Winston last year, is that you had a guy that wasn't afraid to try that throw. Because you're not going to be successful in the NFL if you're unwilling to throw that pass. You have to be able to throw into tight windows and lead your receivers open sometimes. And guess what? Sometimes the defender's going to make a better play. Or sometimes you didn't read the play perfectly, or you were a little bit late. And I don't think it's fair to crush a guy for that. You know, I think it's okay for these quarterbacks to make mistakes. You know, I don't believe in the line of coaching that says, I don't believe in telling a player, don't make mistakes. That's silly, because then you're putting it in his head, don't make plays. I'd rather have a guy out there that's going to be aggressive and take those calculated risks at times. You know, and yeah, you don't want to be like Jay Cutler not, you know, notwithstanding this year, he hasn't been that guy this year so far. But if you look at Cutler's career, he takes too many risks. And again, kind of like I talked about earlier with North Turner and the fine balance that you have to find with taking risks, it's the same goes for quarterback. And I think Goff does a really good job of that. I mean, is he an Andrew Luck type prospect? No. But, I mean, Andrew Luck also had multiple 3-interception games. So this 5-interception performance to me is not what's making me say that. Mm-hmm. To me, I still think this is a guy, he's a future top 15 NFL quarterback, possibly top 10 in the mold of like a Matt Ryan type. I think he can be better because he's worked with less, just like Ryan did in college. But I like his poise and demeanor a little bit more than I liked Matt Ryan's when I went back to watch Matt Ryan film. So, you know, will he be that good? We'll see. We'll end up seeing. There's still half the season left. If he's a disaster down the stretch, I reserve the right to change my mind. But, you know, I've seen this guy 14 games. I'm very comfortable with him. You know, he's a guy that hasn't folded against great teams before, and he just didn't play his best game against Utah. So I think he tried to bite off more than he could chew on a couple of occasions, and those are learning opportunities. I'd like to see how he bounces back now in the next 2 or 3 weeks, especially. And if he goes out and he's not making those same mistakes, that's a huge, great positive that I'm going to take from that.
Right. And he certainly has another tough matchup this week playing at UCLA.
Yeah.
So we'll certainly see how he bounces back there. Also this week in college, it's you and I guess, going at each other. Ohio State and Penn State. And I'm looking forward to Penn State getting punched right in the mouth. Hopefully Penn State can hang in there, though, with Ohio State struggling a little bit. But I don't know. I just still feel Ohio State is just too talented with Bosa. And, you know, Penn State hasn't been overly impressive all season. You know, yeah, they had the nice win over Indiana. But, you know, they almost kind of had to do that to kind of prove that they were still pretty good after the disappointment against Army. So, I don't know. What do you think? What's going to happen Saturday night?
I think it's going to be a good game. I mean, these two teams tend to play pretty close games. Every team that Ohio State has played has given them their best shot. So, you know, it's one of those things where I think Ohio State's just too talented, and they have done that quite a bit this year. I mean, they haven't necessarily been the dominant team that everyone wants to see, but they're a team that wins because eventually they pull away at the end because their talent is just too overwhelming. Their style is too overwhelming. I think that happens again. Although, I mean, Penn State, they've got pretty good running back situation with Barkley and Lynch. Those guys are pretty good together, mm-hmm. Especially Barkley. I think he's a real stud in the making. I'd probably put him among the top few freshman running backs in the country. You know, it's just going to be hard. It's Carl Nassib is really, really good.
Yeah.
Austin Johnson's really good. Anthony Zettel's a really good college player. You know, can they beat Ohio State though? I think they're going to keep it close. I'll tell you that much. I don't think they can win. I don't think they will win, or I should say, but you know, weird stuff can happen. I mean, they went to overtime last year, and Joey Bosa, if it wasn't for him destroying at Hackenberg on the last play of the game, I mean, you never know what could have happened. So I think they'll be in it. Big Ten play is tough. That's why I like the Big Ten. Those teams play each other tough. They're usually close games, but they're both facing a pretty good team this year. I mean, I'm impressed, actually, with what Penn State has done as far as making the best out of a limited talent offense.
Yeah, that's fair to say. Yeah,
and they've found their identity. They, you know, they're relying on the running backs to open up for Hackenberg now, mm-hmm. instead of relying on Hackenberg to do everything. And here's a shocker, but Hackenberg's looked a little bit better when they've done that. You know, a big shocking statement there. That when you help out your quarterback, they tend to look a little bit better. Maybe some NFL teams should take note of that.
Yeah. But I agree. I don't think they can go into Columbus and beat the Buckeyes. But like you said, at least the offense is starting to look a little better with the better run game. So it should be interesting. It'll be fun to watch. But yeah, speaking of the Big Ten, certainly some surprises there. Michigan, a nice run they've been on since the opening loss to Utah. Big one for them against Michigan State. Iowa's undefeated. Could Iowa potentially run the table and get to the Big Ten title game? That'd be something to see.
Yeah, I mean, you never know.
I don't know how much you've been following Iowa this season.
But... I have, yeah. I caught their last game. I mean, they seem destined to be that team to make it. You know, they got kind of lucky with their schedule. But sometimes it takes a little bit of luck, and they're taking full advantage. So I'm not going to take anything away from them. You know, you're playing the schedule that you have. And
exactly.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, you just play the schedule that's in front of you. I mean, this week may be their toughest game remaining on their schedule at Northwestern, because then they got Maryland, who's been struggling this season.
Yep.
At Indiana might be a bit of a tough game for them, but if they can get past that...
Depends on who's their quarterback for them.
Right.
That definitely is something key, because I mean, if they're on their third string quarterback again, you know, it's probably not going to be too tough of a game.
If they can get past that, then they've got back-to-back homes against Minnesota and Purdue, which, you know, look winnable, and then at Nebraska on Black Friday. So it's possible, you know. Who would have thought, though, that Iowa and Northwestern could potentially be first spot in the Big Ten title game? Because right now, these are the top two teams in the West Division, as surprising as that sounds. And this is the division that has Wisconsin in it.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a pretty shocking development so far. And I mean, even if you look on the other side of the division, Michigan is favored against Michigan State this week. I mean, I would have never thought that, you know, barring a Connor Cook injury. And I mean, that hasn't happened. So, I mean, Michigan looks like a top five team right now, and they probably look like the best Big Ten team of all teams. So, you know, that's the team that Jim Harbaugh got his hands on, and he's really crafted something special. We'll see if they can continue against a really good team in Michigan State. You kind of wonder if Michigan's peaking a little bit early, but they're someone that could really make a statement this weekend.
Absolutely. So a lot of good stuff to look forward to.
And if you want a good draft matchup this weekend, look no further than Ole Miss and Texas A&M. You're going to be able to see left tackle Laramie Tunsil against defensive end Myles Garrett. That's going to be an insane matchup, okay? Those are probably, like, Myles Garrett is probably the number one pick next year, or 2017, and then Laramie Tunsil could be a top five pick this year in 2016. So if you want to watch a good SEC battle, if for nothing else than just to watch those two, it'll be worth your time.
There you go, a little inside draft talk there. I think, we've already talked for almost an hour. It's amazing how fast time flies when we're sitting here having fun, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Just for the fun of it, scrolling through some of the standings. Florida, SEC East, very well could run the table there, or at least close to run the table, look like the favorite. Just a lot of surprises, as we've seen, but you know that's why we love it. Any final thoughts heading into this weekend?
I don't. So if you're following on Twitter, I won't be sending out as many passing charts or coverage charts. I'm going to try to get coverage charts caught up here soon, but I did just start a new job today, so that's going to severely bite into my time.
Round of applause. Woo!
Yeah.
Clang, clang.
Yeah, in one hand, it kind of stinks because I won't be covering football quite as much. On another hand, it is severely welcome, especially to my bank account. So really excited about that opportunity. And you know, for people that want to work in sports or at least have tried to work in sports and couldn't or whatever it may be, you know, the habits that you develop playing sports, working in sports, it can definitely translate to other fields, and people really notice when you work and when you grind, and you can get great jobs outside of sports sometimes if you're willing to put in the work. So, you know, just whatever your goals are, just keep fighting for them and keep your eyes and ears up, though, to other opportunities, because people notice hard work. And if they can see that you're a hard worker in one field, they'll know that you're a hard worker in another field.
And I can kind of account to that, too. You know, playing football in high school, it's not just about playing the game. It really is about learning life lessons. You know, even a couple weeks ago when I talked to the local high school coach, he made that pretty clear. You know, they teach life lessons, you know, being accountable in life and, you know, things like that. So, you know, good advice there from Ian for those out there. Hey, Mike Clay tweeting about the Jaguars.
It's a Jaguars type of night.
That's a good way to end it. We finished strong with the Jaguars. So, but yeah, and once again, thanks so much to Eric for stopping by. It was a real great talk with him. Really hope to have him on sometime, especially during the draft season. You know, because he's obviously a great mind, and you know, the two of you and other people, we could build a nice little mock draft here in the future. Hint, hint.
Absolutely.
But in any event, as always, thanks so much for listening, guys. We really do appreciate it. Enjoy the games this weekend, as always. I know I will, Ian will, Eric will. It's going to be a lot of fun. Remember to follow us on Twitter, because we're quite active there. And go Cubs, and go Flyers, and hope the Sixers tank. So for Ian Moore and I'm Bill Rossetti, thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next week right here on the Gridiron Graduates. Until then, take care, everybody.